He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys. Baby, you can drive my
car. Good morning to our listeners for this week's show on Car Keys at Robin Hood Radio. I'd like to start out with a couple of topics that I have made some notes on, and Jay will chime in, I'm sure. One of the first ones is I get online magazines, and I was looking this morning at, I think it's Motor Trend, but I didn't realize that the manual transmission is still as much alive amongst the car makers as it seems to be, and there are, according to Motor Trend's article, 30 vehicles that are still available with 6-speed or 7-speed manual transmissions, which is quite a assortment of vehicles for those enthusiasts who are dedicated to remaining manual shift car owners and drivers. I got just about the whole list done before we had to come on to broadcast to you all, and I'll just go down it quickly. Anybody who wants to listen to it again can always listen to the podcast of this show. And Jay may be able to chime in when he finds out that I've missed about four, if he knows them all in memory. But I'm going to just read it down slowly, steadily. It'll take a minute or so to get through the ones I've made a list of. And they are as follows. Manual transmissions are available in 2024 models of the following cars: Acura Integra, BMW M2, M3, and M4 models, Cadillac CT4V Blackwing Edition, and CT5 Blackwing Editions. These are very expensive. The Chevrolet Camaro, the Ford Bronco four-cylinder engine only, the Ford Mustang, Honda Civic, Hyundai Elantra N versions, Jeep Gladiator pickup, Jeep Wranglers, most models, Kia Forte GT, Lotus Emira, I guess, Mazda Miata, and the Mazda 3, the Mini Convertible and Hardtops, the Nissan Versa, a Nissan Z, Porsche 718 Boxster and 718 Caymans, Porsche 911s, the Twins, Subaru BRZ, and Toyota GR86, Toyota GR Corolla, the Subaru WRX, and I'm missing three or four, Jay, but that's pretty good for enthusiasts who want these vehicles. And you've driven a few of them, so you can comment.
I have. I do think there's a lot of nostalgia here because, you know, in the list you've just read out, there are a few more basic models like the Honda Civic, and that's pretty much it, the Nissan Versa. But most of the other cars, including the Porsches, the Cadillacs, the BMW M2, M3, M4, they are all high-performance cars, and they are all available with either 6, 7, or 8 speed automatic transmissions, and they all perform better with the automatic transmissions. 20,
correct.
30 years ago, manuals outperformed automatic transmissions that were usually 3 or 4 speed, and that was it, and slow shifting, and you know, manual transmissions got better gas mileage, better performance, but that is no longer true. And so there really is a lot of nostalgia, and manufacturers like Porsche, for instance, in their very high-end, most extreme versions of their sports cars don't offer a manual transmission anymore. And yes, people like you or myself who grew up driving manuals and have driven many or owned many kind of regret not having them. But the reality is they're associated with cars of the past. And you know, it's great to have them in a Mazda Miata, you know, an MX-5, a Mini, but the reality is they are disappearing. And so if we want them, or if you want a manual transmission in a new car, get it now. Some of the manufacturers that still offered manual transmissions, like Volkswagen on some of their models, don't offer them anymore on their on on the base models. So, yes, nostalgia, but get one before it's too late.
Well, I'll chime in with that because I have an older vehicle, you know, the Mazda RX-7, that I have in 84, and it has a manual transmission. I think it's 4-speed. Maybe it's 5. I can't remember. These cars, in their time, it was interesting. You go to the enthusiasts that items that the magazines represent that we like is 0 to 60 time frame. And, I mean, it's just phenomenal how fast cars can get from 0 to 60. And I'll stick with fossil fuel because they're very fast, even though I think a couple of electric models can do it faster.
But, most of them.
My Mazda is in 1984, and those engines are much smaller than the engines of today. And even though it was a rotary, and it's the biggest rotary that they then put in the Mazda RX-7 that I have in my model, and I don't think the 0 to 60 time is extremely fast. It might be for that year and that model, but the real fun of it is stirring through the gears manually when you're going around corners and fun driving roads and uphills and downhills. You can downshift and get an actual real engine braking, which you can't do with many automatic transmission cars now. And they are just fun to drive. And I must say, I also have a Mustang GT convertible with a 5-speed manual in that too. I actually had to park it for a year or so when I had a knee problem, and I found that shifting a manual transmission car with a left knee problem made it very difficult on the knee and therefore difficult to shift at times. And, of course, as Jay, you mentioned, the automatic transmissions of today are for sheer acceleration are better than the manuals because the computers that run them can shift them so quickly that they can defeat the speed of most people's arms and legs clutching and shifting the transmission through the gears.
So let's fast forward to the new world and the world we live in with our 8 or 10, 9 or 10 speed automatics. What most people, there's two things. One is it's sad to realize that a lot of younger drivers don't even have a concept of what a gear is, and the fact that, you know, there are different gears in a car, any ICE-powered car anyway. And, you know, what I tell people is, you know, think of a bicycle and the different gears, and that's what gears are in a car. And some people who've never ridden bicycles look at you with a funny look. But what the rest of us, a lot of us, don't use is the ability to use the manual option in the automatic transmissions. And a lot of modern cars, if not most, now have paddle shift behind the steering wheels. And, you know, I sometimes drive people cars, and they look at me funny when I start clicking the paddles left and right. And,
right.
And a lot
Absolutely.
Of people just have no idea what they're there for. Now,
well,
to be honest, it does not add much to the experience. And again, back to the bottom line is that automatic transmissions work really, really well. And then we're all going to be driving electric cars in the next 10 years, and there's no transmission at all.
Beg to differ with you. There is a maker out there that has actually put a 2-speed electric transmission in a vehicle.
Yeah. Porsche has a 2-speed, and I think they carry it on to their Quattro e-tron. I'm pretty sure because it's mechanically the same car.
Yeah.
But yeah, Porsche has a 2-speed transmission. The axles, it's a 2-speed on one end and a single speed on the other.
For our listeners, I do want to go back to the manual versus the automatic transmission situation because one of the great things about a manual transmission, and especially those that are, you know, most of them aren't more than 6-speed, except for the Bronco, which has a 7-speed transmission with the granny, where the first gear really not really made for use on road, it's made for use off-road. But be it as it may, you can really effectively downshift, get coasting control in a manual transmission much more than in an automatic transmission, because you don't have as many gears between the low and the high gears, and therefore the engine, the gear spacings are more agreeable for manual downshifting if you want to use downshifting to control your speed versus brakes. The 10-speed transmissions or the 9-speed transmissions, I have Jeeps with 9-speed transmissions, and they are useless for using them to actually either hold a speed if you're going 60 or 50 miles an hour, hold a speed going down a hill at that speed level, because the ratios are not conducive to actually getting the braking aspect of a manual transmission capability in the automatics with 9 speeds.
So let me barge in on that with the 10-speed automatics. I actually, and I had forgotten about this, a couple of weeks ago I drove a new Ford Bronco for the first time, you know, and it has the 10-speed automatic transmission that I believe that's a transmission Ford and GM developed together, quite
it
surprisingly.
Is.
And the car or the truck has the four-cylinder turbo engine in it, and it's pretty peppy. And what I realized is when I was looking at what gear I was in that particular transmission, actually 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th gear really worked like you would expect from a quote-unquote normal transmission, where even on at normal highway speeds at 70, 75 miles an hour, the truck would go into 10th gear and stay locked into 10th and not come down into 9th or 8th gear. And so all the lower gears were the ones that were being skipped and probably at slow speed get used more so. But it actually worked really, really well.
I agree. In the 9-speed transmissions in my Jeeps work really well. For using them in the higher ratios for mileage MPGs and cruising, I was specifically referring to the difficulty of these 10 speeds to be effective in slowing down a vehicle without using brakes going down a hill. They are not effective because the ratios are so high or narrowly spaced in the upper gears that you try to go from 9 to 8 to 7, and the engine and the vehicle barely. It doesn't even slow down in the Jeeps at all, and the ratio at fourth down to one are so much farther spaced away from those upper gears transmission is designed not to go into the lower gear unless they safely can do so without over revving an engine. So you know, again, we've got computers controlling all these transmissions, these automatic transmissions, and they are smarter than we are as far as controlling decreasing speeds. Increasing speeds or higher speeds, Jay, as you mentioned in the 10-speed Fords, it's interesting that I have 3 Cherokees in my family. I actually have 4, and 3 of them have the turbo engine, and the 4th is the older non-turbo 4, and that's the only one that'll go into 9th gear and lock on a interstate. I have yet to find a turbo version of the Jeep using ninth gear in any cruising condition, except possibly going down a slight downhill in an interstate type of situation. 8th gear is its top gear that it uses, and I've actually gone in 9th gear manually. You can get it up there, but the MPGs, which you can look at on the dashboard with the options you have for scrolling through systems, seems to be a little bit lower than at the 8th gear. So the computers figured out that 8th gear is the maximum gear for the highest MPG that these engines will produce in these vehicles in a cruise mode.
So
we can get off this almost after you finish.
You want to talk? I think we've covered the whole transmission thing for now.
We have.
You had another subject. You had something else you wanted to talk
Yes,
about.
I wanted to talk about. We've had a couple of snowstorms recently, and we've had warm weather conditions in our state, in our listening area, with temperatures getting down to below freezing But with so much water on the roads, I've noted a couple of things that some drivers who are really focused on their driving may be interested in knowing. We have a lot of new highway systems with these rumble strips in the middle to let you know when you're crossing the double yellow line. And what I've noted is that these fill up with water during rainy situations, and I've noted that they froze in a couple of instances. And when I was on the roads, they froze into ice, which makes them basically, when you fill these rumble areas between the lines, they fill up with water to the level of the asphalt that is on either side of them, and they become slippery. This goes along with the black ice problem and people not recognizing when black ice is on these dark asphalt roads. And until salt gets on the roads and turns them white so that you can see a difference between a dry road and a wet road, I noted that some of the roads were very were wet, but they were looked dry because you could not see any glare, because if it was cloudy, you didn't get that. And they became very dangerous during these storms. And there were a couple of accidents, major accidents, of people who obviously lost control of their cars on black ice. And one of them had done a 180 and ended up backwards in the woods, completely off, and the police and everybody were there. So accidents with black ice on these storms that we've had around our northwest corner, because we haven't had stable, cold temperatures, so there's been a transition to black ice on the roads instead of just dry asphalt and then snow, which you can see and you can feel, are a condition that drivers should pay much more attention to when they are commuting to work or driving in the in darkness and you can't see what the condition of the roads is.
Well, I'll just say a couple things I say pretty much every year on this show. Is if I have any doubts on what the road conditions may be, and if it looks shiny and we don't know if it's just wet or sheer ice, stop the car and walk the pavement and get a feel for it. And also, and I say this every year too, there are differences when you know, in our tri-state corner, when you go from one state to the other, the states cover the roads or you know, salt them or sand them in different ways. And if you go, I'm thinking of Route 41 in Massachusetts, and it looks like it just rained because they put so much liquid salt on the roads that it's just all liquid. And yes, you have decent grip, but then you get into Connecticut and the conditions may be very different. So just a couple things. Like Robin said, be extremely careful.
Getting out and testing is fine if the road is really consistently have long stretches of this problem. But the corners are the real problems for drivers, and you really do have to focus on it. And they're not. And you may have a patch of just 20 feet of black ice, but if it's on a corner, you could conceptually lose control, slide across the yellow line, depending on the direction of the curve and all that kind of thing, and find yourself panicking and therefore getting even into worse trouble than you might already be and just sliding that way. So that's a safety type of situation for the winter season in which this show was taped. And it's going to continue because we are having really strange weather patterns transitioning between rain and snow and warm and cold temperatures. And this brings back the mention of tires and tire tread condition and all that. And there are a lot of people out here with tires that are down in their wear bars, and they either don't know it, don't check it, or until it's too late. And this is when you really want to have good tires and good tread wear levels remaining on those tires to avoid even more trouble in these changeable conditions. Jay, go ahead. Take it over.
Well, just little tidbits here and there. Cold weather, people kind of forget. Maybe younger people in the old days, we used to be very careful about warming up cars when we start them. You don't need to start a car and let it idle for a half an hour, because at that point the engine may not ever reach its operating temperature. But you also don't want to get into a car, in a cold car, in freezing temperatures, and just rev the engine and start off like a revving at 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 RPM. So be smooth, be easy on your engine when you start your car. That's just a little tidbit.
Well, I want to go to wiper blades for a minute because some cars have heated. You do not want to if your cars are outside and you've had snow and ice on your windshields. You do not want to pull your wiper blades if they're frozen to the windshield. You probably do not want to pull your wiper blades off the windshield without them warming the windshield and letting them become unstuck, because you can tear the rubber on the blades. And if you do that, you may have blades that will be very ineffective in clear cleaning of your windshield until you get new blades.
May I add something that's even maybe more important for the motor itself? Is not to leave your wipers on when you shut the engine off. And,
correct.
You start the car and the wipers are frozen and the motor is trying to move the wipers, and it's just not good.
It won't work. They will not pull the wiper blades away, and they will be effectively jammed, and you may have to turn your car off and release the wiper blades from the windshield and then turn it back on and turn off the wiper switch for sure. And because it'll reset, it will not break the motor in most cases I know of. But there might be a switch that turns off the wiper motors when this happens, and you have to reset
the wiper,
it by switching the signal
not,
off.
Anyway, it's something to be careful about.
Right. I came out this morning show and looked at my car, and I noticed lots of white around my car. The salt. This brings up a suggestion that you should pay attention to getting your cars washed at car washes when the weather clears, the temperatures rise, the roads are dry, and you should. It's good to take them to the car wash and make sure that there's an underbody wash available in the whatever program you're choosing on the car wash options. Usually, there are three or four dollar cost options, and the lowest option may not have a under car wash option standard on that. But getting the salt off the underbodies of cars and the brake lines and all that could be very helpful in lengthening the life of the underbody of a car, which you don't see, and parts that can rust. Jay, you have any comment?
Nope, I did that a couple of days ago with my little sports car, and unfortunately...
it snowed again.
I drove it a few miles to dry it down. I had fun, and now it's put away. And every time it's nice like it is today, I think about taking it out. But there is too much salt on the roads. So we'll see you in the spring. And
okay.
I think we're pretty much out of time. We'll talk to everybody next week.